You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 291 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on a fine Tuesday evening into Wednesday. You know, it's a holiday week, so probably not going to be a jam-packed 5 days a week with shows this week, but I do want to check in between games. The Hawks, of course, play on Wednesday night against the Clippers, which was going to be part of the later portion of this podcast, a little bit of a schedule look ahead, but a couple of just basically a news and notes podcast, some looking at the numbers to this point in the season for the Hawks, as well as a look ahead to the rest of the schedule, and some, basically a little bit about John Collins, a little bit about Ersan Ilyasova, sort of just bouncing around and getting the lay of the land right now from the Hawks' perspective, because obviously Thursday's show, the Thanksgiving official show, is going to be about the game on Wednesday night. So before that, a lot to get to on today's program. Quickly into the numbers, kind of ironically, Tuesday night is a one-game night in the NBA. The Lakers and Bulls play as I'm actually recording this. I'm watching that game in the background. But aside from that, not a whole lot else going on. So these numbers should be pretty accurate as of the time you're listening to this podcast on Wednesday morning. The Hawks are 3-14, of course. Basketball Reference says their expected record is 6-11. ESPN believes their expected record is 5-12. So all that to say, the Hawks are a little bit better, it seems like, than their 3-14 record, but not necessarily close to 500 mark, something like that. And it kind of all depends on how much you weigh that 46-point win over the Kings last week. The Hawks are 23rd in offense at 102.2 points per 100 possessions. They are third in the NBA, though, in three-point shooting percentage. That's 39.1% as a team. That seems unsustainably high, honestly. There's not that many good shooters on this team. There are some, Marco Bellinelli, Luke Babbitt, to be sure, are high-end shooters. Elsewhere, there's a couple of guys who are fully capable of making shots. But, for instance, Dwayne Dedman shooting 40-plus percent, Malcolm Delaney shooting 40-plus percent, and Torian Prince as well in the mid-40s. Probably all those. Maybe Delaney is sustainable. The other two probably are not. But something to file away there. The Hawks struggling a little bit offensively, and it might get a little bit worse, honestly, when the shooting regresses, although there are some places in which the Hawks could have an uptick in production. Just something to keep an eye on there. Defensively, the Hawks are number 21 in the league in defense, allowing 106.4 points per 100 possessions. I just would encourage people to go back and listen to what I said with Jeff Siegel a couple of days ago on the podcast about the three-point shooting that he unearthed, some of the numbers there. Without getting too deep into the minutia, the Hawks are getting a little bit lucky there as well, allowing a lot of three-pointers. They're allowing the third most three-pointers in the entire league, and that's just raw threes. In terms of open threes, they're even worse than that in a lot of metrics depending on where you look. So some regression could be coming there as well. Even though the Hawks are not great defensively, I think 21st is probably what I would have picked, somewhere around there, coming into the season defensively. I thought they would be better on that end of the floor than they are on offense, which seems to be true at this point. But still, I'm not sure that they're much better than that, especially when you factor in some of the luck-based stuff that's going on. That combination of 23rd in offense and 21st in defense allows for the Hawks to be number 26 overall in terms of net rating at minus 4.3 points per 100 possessions. That's certainly buoyed a little bit by the 46.1 over the Kings. Of course, every NBA team probably has a result or two that are sharply outside the norm, but in a small sample size of 17 games, having a 46-point win, I'm not sure anybody would say that that's necessarily indicative of what's going on, whereas the Hawks haven't really had that kind of blowout loss. So a little bit skewed, slightly, I would say, there, but still probably a reasonably true outcome. The Hawks were number 11 overall in pace, so they're actually playing a little bit faster this year than they have in previous years. It's still early. At the same time, most of the NBA is playing a little bit faster this year, and the Hawks are sort of going along with that, but still that sort of factors in both sides of the equation. So Atlanta playing faster is an encouraging thing, because that's what they wanted to do coming into the year. They'd be able to accomplish that for the most part. Also, the Hawks are 14th in true shooting percentage, but only 22nd in turnover percentage. Some of that true shooting is buoyed by the three-point shooting that's unsustainably high, I think, but some pretty reasonable efficiency and no really bad free throw shooting, which is also good. Most of the guys who are getting the line regularly for Atlanta are good enough free throw shooters, where that is going to help true shooting percentage quite a bit. The Hawks are number 29 in defensive rebounding rate and number 20 overall in offensive rebounding rate. That's basically all John Collins, who we'll talk about a little bit later on the podcast, but he's the biggest reason why the Hawks are not terrible offensive rebounding. It's basically a one-man wrecking crew there. And yeah, that's going to be basically all of that. I will say, just before we get to Collins a little bit later on the podcast, he is in a 16% offensive rebound rate, which is fifth in the NBA behind Andre Drummond, Enes Kanter, Ed Davis, and DeAndre Jordan. So in short, he's already a terror on the offensive glass, and that really, really helps Atlanta to be respectable in that way, despite the fact that the overall rebounding is still a problem for this team. And that was some of that scheme-based, and that's worth noting. That's pretty much it for the numbers. Just want to kind of a little bit of a redux there. You know, some of the advanced metrics are sort of split. It's still very early, and as a result, those are less accurate, I would say. But still wanted to sort of throw a lot of numbers at you, let you guys sort of break, you know, take it all in and take a real, to sort of come together in grips with the realization that the Hawks aren't going to be, this is not necessarily a crazy low start for Atlanta. You know, I would probably argue this is probably a team that should go 5-12 over a 17 game sample that we just saw, but still, I'm not sure they're much better than that at this point in time. Elsewhere, before we get into a little bit of a read about the good folks at Draft, Ersan Ilyasova has been dealing with a personal loss that came to light, according to the AJC's Michael Cunningham on Tuesday. Ilyasova lost his father 2 weeks ago back in Turkey, where Ilyasova grew up, and was not able to go back and take care of his family as a result. You know, that's only a part of it. I can't imagine losing my father in that way and not being able to support my family. There's been a lot of talk about Ilyasova's struggles on the floor, and obviously he's been injured quite a bit as well. He's missed 10 games this season, and when he returned, we talked about this a little bit on the show yesterday, is that Ilyasova has not played particularly well, and right now seems to be behind Tyler Cavanaugh even in the pecking order. But still, you know, Ilyasova, that's some of it, I'm sure, can be explained the fact that he's not exactly been locked in mentally. You know, hard to blame him for that. A lot of these guys have stuff going on off the floor that we have to keep in mind, and nothing really actionable there, except for to say, you know, I hope things get better for Ilyasova. I hope he's able to cope with that, and the family gets better through that. And if you're the type of person that wants to send thoughts and prayers, please go ahead and do that for Ersan Ilyasova. Before we get to the rest of the podcast, though, I do want to talk to you about the good folks at Draft. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that these chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than other salary cap sites in the fantasy basketball game? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more games crushed by the pros. It's not just me. More than 1 million people have downloaded the Draft app to play in a real live NBA draft right now, be done in less than 5 minutes, and get paid out the next day if you are able to succeed. Drafts are filling every single second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into the Real Money Draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code LOHawks. That's LOHawks to play in a Real Money Draft for free by using that promo code LOHawks. But it gets absolutely even better. Draft is sure. I'm so sure that you'll love it, and so are they. That they're even offering a big time money back guarantee up to $100 if you follow that. If you follow that kind of stuff, it's very interesting. If you go into the site, there's a lot of explainers as to what that entails. But use that promo code LOHawks to get all the way into the draft process, because it's a lot of fun to ride with fantasy basketball on a nightly basis. And even if you want to just play for $1 at a time, that there's a place to do that on the Draft app. So just search Draft in your app store. Go to draft.com if you want to do that on your desktop, and come play free right now with the promo code LOHawks. That's LOHawks, and check out Draft today. Elsewhere on the program, and with that out of the way, we can get into a couple more things. The schedule opens up a little bit for the Hawks. If you are someone who's optimistic about Atlanta in the near future, with that 3-14 record, a lot of it could be tied to the fact that the Hawks' schedule is now much easier. I think it's been overblown a little bit, that just as to how quote unquote difficult it's been. It's somewhere in the middle of the pack in terms of strength and schedule, depending on where you look. But in the next eight or nine games here, it actually opens up quite a bit. The next game is going to be Wednesday, of course, as Joel said, it's probably tonight. No Mike Muscala, no Luke Babbitt in that game, so let's keep an eye on that. Both of those guys were ruled out on Tuesday, leaving Atlanta with just John Collins, Ersan Ilyasova, and Tyler Cavanaugh as options at the power forward spot. In terms of actual power forwards, the Hawks did play some small ball against the Spurs, and that could happen again against the Clippers, but might even get the first start of John Collins' career, so we'll keep an eye on that. But it's the Clippers on Wednesday. The Clippers have lost 9 in a row, so that's a winnable spot for sure at Phillips Arena, followed by the Knicks on Friday at home. The Raptors, which is they're actually playing quite well, but on Saturday at home, that's a back-to-back for Atlanta, so that's kind of a tough spot, but still a home game, and semi-winnable there. And then after the Raptors game, the Hawks have 4 full days off, which is a very, very weird quirk in the schedule before hosting the Cavs. And then at Brooklyn, home for Brooklyn and a back-to-back. Not a two days back-to-back, but that's two straight games. And then a at Orlando, home for Orlando. So the four games in a row, they play Brooklyn twice and Orlando twice and splits. And those the Hawks are going to be going out and sweeping all four of those games. But those are all very, very winnable spots. You know, the Raptors being the Raptors and Cavs, not exactly breezy because Cleveland is playing better. But still, that's a situation where the Hawks could go 500 over an 8-9 game span, which isn't anything crazy to write home about. But when compared to 3-14 mark, it's certainly a big point of improvement. At this point in time, 538 projects a 23-59 record for Atlanta. Team rankings projects a 27-55 record, and the most optimistic one comes from NumberFire, who actually projects still after 3-14 start a 34-48 record for Atlanta, which I cannot fathom honestly projecting at this point in time. But you know, maybe if you're a Hawks fan, gets still optimistic about this team, that could be some guiding light for you in this particular moment of the season. Last thing on the agenda, and this is probably an interesting thing to discuss on a number of levels, is that John Collins, I've been asked a ton about this sort of mailbag form, but people ask me to weigh on what his ultimate position will be in the NBA, and I have said this a couple of times on the record, but I'm gonna elaborate just a little bit on today's podcast. Just a lot of talk about it in general. Before we get to the actual argument there, the numbers for John Collins have been fantastic this year. 57% from the floor, 76% from the free throw line, 20.2 PER, which leads the entire team, and he's averaging 19 points and 12 rebounds per 36 minutes, about 10.7 rebounds in a small sample of time on the court per game. I think he's a center. That's the big overarching takeaway. I think he's a long-term NBA center, but I'm also totally on board with playing him at the four, if only so that he can play a little bit more. Honestly, I think it'll sort itself out eventually because I think Dwayne Dedmon is probably going to be traded. I won't say definitely, but before February, it makes a lot of sense to move on from Dwayne Dedmon if you are the Hawks, just based on his contract, without getting too deep into that. It just makes a lot of sense for the Hawks to at least examine that. And I think it could certainly be argued as well that the Hawks are at its best. The Hawks are at the team's best, at least in a vacuum, sample size and opponent sort of taken out there, that with the Hawks playing Collins and Dedmon together, that could be very, very dangerous, especially in some alignments. I think we'll see more of that after what Bud flashed against the Spurs in the last contest. You know, some of that was necessity-based, some of that's just San Antonio playing two bigs all the time, or at least most of the time, but still, I think that was sort of a preview of what's to come with Collins and Dedmon playing together. It's worth mentioning and re-emphasizing, I think, at this point, that it's part of the reason why Collins fell to 19. I'm not sure it's all the reason or how much of a reason, but it's certainly part of the reason, is that he's kind of a tweener, honestly. That was a mistake, of course, that he fell to 19. He's certainly a better player than that and a better prospect than that, but he measured 6'9.5" in shoes at the draft combine. He's only a 6'11" wingspan, so he still has some reasonable length. He's a great athlete, of course, which helps, but he's not fully dynamically center sized, you would say, in a traditional sense. But at the same time, if you look around the NBA, there's not really many power forwards, quote unquote, that feature his particular skill set. It's a league that is going a lot smaller at power forward, especially with some combo guys, and Collins is really more of a combo 4-5 to be sure than an actual 4. He could certainly play, I think Collins could certainly play next to a center long term, if it's the right center. I think if Collins develops his perimeter game offensively, or that center has defensive mobility and really is able to stretch the floor offensively, that combination could be very interesting. I will say, though, I think it's going to be far more difficult for the Hawks to build around a player like that at the four with Collins in today's NBA, just because defense is going to be an issue if you're playing against some small ball lineups. And Collins, I think we'll certainly get better out on the floor defensively, but I don't think he's ever going to be this guy. He's going to be flying around and being particularly adept on the perimeter defensively. I could be wrong about that. None of this, by the way, is to bag on Collins. I think he's been fantastic. I got some pushback on that on the podcast episode I did with Jeff Siegel about having Collins in the back half of the top 10, but that's not a slight at him. That's just me being a little bit higher on some other guys in the draft. And still, I think it's a home run pick at this point time with what we've seen so far. I can certainly see the argument, honestly, that he's been the top big man in that entire class. You know, it's basically him against Lauri Markkanen. I guess Jonathan Isaac, who's banged up right now, would be a quote-unquote big man, even though he's more of a hybrid player. Collins is fantastic, honestly, and it's tough to argue against him in that way. I just want to address that positional thing just a little bit, because people keep asking me. It's already been coming up a lot, and of course, the favorite Al Horford conversation of, is he a natural center, is already around with John Collins. You know, I'm not, honestly, that doesn't really really matter to me at this point in time. The NBA is very positionless at this point, which takes away a little bit of that. But you know, casual fans especially are always going to keep asking about whether guys are actual true centers, quote unquote, or true power forwards or natural positions and all that fun stuff. I'm just kind of voicing my opinion here, but I think his best long term position is the five. I will say though, it's not like he can't play any four. That's something I'm not saying. So don't hear that when I'm saying that I think he's a center. He certainly can play the four. I've argued a little bit back with people that I understand what Bud is trying to do and not playing him a whole lot with Dedmon, just because I think Bud is hopefully, at least in my opinion, seeing him for what he is long-term, which is a center. In my opinion, I will say though, you know, I will never object to playing John Collins more. So I can say with confidence that I think he's a center long term. But at the same time, if you're going to tell me he's going to play 30 minutes a night and half those minutes need to come at a power forward spot in order to get there right now, his development is one of the most important things about this entire season for Atlanta. So please go ahead and get him on the floor as much as possible. That's sort of the one bright spot, and having Ilyasova struggle a little bit and having Muscala be banged up, obviously never want to root for that kind of stuff, but it does allow Collins more opportunities to sort of get on the floor without any hesitation on Bud's part. And you know, the game that Tyler Cavanaugh is playing over him in the second half, I was very upset about that at times. You know, so it's part of that's Cavanaugh not being really a thing for me, but Collins I just want to see as much as possible for all the reasons that you might expect at this point in time, and that by any means necessary, get him on the floor as much as possible. So that's going to be it for today's podcast. We will do a Thursday, quote-unquote, Thanksgiving show. It's going to be just a pure game recap of what takes place against the Clippers on Wednesday from the arena. I will be in attendance for that one. I might miss a game over the weekend, and I will say this, unless something crazy happens, I'm not going to be recording a podcast until at least Sunday after that Thanksgiving show, which I'll remind you guys of tomorrow on the podcast. I'm not going to kill myself covering those two games in terms of breaking them down immediately, and it is a holiday weekend, so I'm sure you guys understand that. Most podcasts can be taking a break during that point in time, but I wanted to come back with another episode here, sort of quench that thirst a little bit more of a big picture episode than anything else. So please stay tuned for tomorrow's podcast as we break down that game. Happy Thanksgiving early if people are going to miss that podcast as they're traveling and all that stuff. I definitely understand it, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.